Afghanistan could be a source of vast wealth.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. American geologists and government officials believe Afghanistan is sitting on $1 trillion of copper and lithium deposits. That's according to this morning's New York Times. Joining us live to talk about this report is Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Good morning.
Good morning.
You have reported from Afghanistan, Gregory. How new a development is this? Did somebody really just wake up and realize there's $1 trillion buried in the backyard?
Well, back in the 1980s, Soviet geologists were finding what they thought were mineral deposits in Afghanistan. What's new now, though, is that senior American officials are reporting that actually these deposits might be some of the largest in the world. Deposits of gold, iron, copper, and lithium, which is used in batteries for our Blackberries and laptops.
You know, Afghanistan seems so chaotic now. How realistic would it be to start a major mining industry?
To get an industry off the ground from scratch could take a while. The other question, though, is can the government handle the process? I reached Ali Mauji on his cell phone in Kabul. He's the diplomatic director of the Aga Khan Development Network. They've done a lot of development projects in Afghanistan.
I think the critical thing is to ensure that the government has the right policy frameworks, regulatory mechanisms, and capacity to deal with private sector requests.
Gregory, one more question. When we start talking about Afghanistan as a lucrative place, you have to wonder how this could affect the American mission there and America's motivations to stay.
Well, Bill, one of the big criticisms of America that you do hear on the Kabul streets is that we're just there for the resources. So America has to be careful not to seem to be sticking around militarily just to compete for those private sector contracts. Also, China's involved here. They just won a copper mining rights in Afghanistan, and American officials say they bribed the Minister of Mines to get it. So finally, there is this problem of who does benefit from a mining industry. Will it be the Afghan people or individual power brokers inside and outside the government?
Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congress has been working on new rules for the American financial system for months, and the end game is at hand. This week, senators and House members meet to work out their versions of financial reform bills. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports the interested parties are lobbying furiously.
Banks are lobbying to protect their bottom lines. One reform would cap the fees banks can charge retailers for each swipe of a credit card. Another requires banks to spin off their derivatives trading. Plus, there's a ban on banks trading for themselves in the stock market. Banks say the profits lost will hurt lending. But former FDIC Chairman William Isaac, the author of a book on the financial crisis called Senseless Panic, doesn't think so.
It is going to hit the earnings of some of the very largest banks to some degree. I don't think it's pain they can't find a way to deal with.
Banks also face a tax to pay for the unwinding of failing institutions. David Nason with Promontory Financial asks, why hit up banks for something that may not be needed?
If it's truly supposed to be extraordinary relief, it seems odd that you would want to fund that in advance, because how could you predict what would be provided?
He says better to borrow the money to dismantle a sick bank and then require healthy banks to pay back the loan. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And another financial meltdown seems a little farther from investors' minds today. Stocks are up around the world following last week's Wall Street rise. It was the first winning week for the Dow Industrials in a month. This morning, stocks in both Europe and Asia are higher by about 1%. On Friday, the Dow rose 39 points and closed at 10,211, up almost 3% for the week.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com. American Public Media presents The Great Textbook War, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the Batten Institute at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
Now it's time for today's Marketplace Globalist Quiz. Our topic is coal, the biggest source of electricity in this country. Let's welcome our global quizmaster, Stefan Richter. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Bill. Are you ready for today's quiz?
I am. Hit me.
So my question for you today is this. Which country is the most dependent on coal? China, Poland, India, South Africa?
My mind goes to China and India, and I got to think it's China.
They are, of course, the world's leading suspect on everything, but actually no, in this case, they come in number two. 70% of the entire primary energy consumption in China is based on coal, so that's a lot.
So 70% for China, and there's one of those countries that's more dependent?
Yes, and it's either Poland or India or South Africa.
Well, I struck out with economic powerhouses. How about if I say South Africa?
Bingo!
Ah.
The World Cup of soccer is upon us, and South Africa is the host. Over three-quarters, 77.7% of their entire energy consumption is coal-based.
So how does U.S. coal consumption compare to the rest of the world?
So the world average is just under 30%, and the United States is under 25%. So in a global context, we're doing pretty well, better than Germany, Japan, and other countries that are often considered to be much more environmentally clean. So not all the news on coal is bad, even though we still all need to clean up our job on that front because it still creates a lot of soot and mess.
Thank you for mining all those nuggets of information, Stefan.
Good to talk with you today.
Stefan Richter is publisher and editor-in-chief of TheGlobalist.com, the daily online magazine on the global economy, politics, and culture. And finally, the comic strip Annie is disappearing from newspapers. Tribune Media Services owns the license to The Little Orphan, and the company says it is ending the print version of the strip. The Financial Sun will continue to come out for Annie. It will just shine online. I mean, Annie has outlasted poverty, orphanages, heartless thugs. Surely she can survive transformational media realignments. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.